top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
What is that?
The guy who uploaded this video said it was from a tape he found in the Black Hills woods. I think that might be my sister.
You really think your sister could still be out there after all these years?
If there is any chance that I could find out what happened to her, I need to try.
Legend said there's been a curse on these woods.
Do you believe in the stories about the Blair Witch? Oh my god.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 266, Blair Witch. I was thinking of a song today.
Witch Girl by Hall & Oates?
No.
Or is that Rich Girl?
Rich Girl. Witch Girl, is that?
Witch Girl.
She's a witch girl. It was written by the same guy who did Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and it's called Accentuate the Positive. A bunch of people have done it.
Accentuate the positive.
I thought, man, like going into this movie, the 20-year anniversary of the release of the Blair Witch Project,
right.
With all the critical lambasting that it received in my little scant research I did before watching it, and I thought, man, I'm going to go into it with a fresh take, because it's spring is in the air, and I'm thinking, I'm going to look for all the positives I can find. Now, if that were the case, this would be a very short podcast, so I'm hoping we have something to bring to the discussion here.
So, because stay tuned next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Join you next week. Take care. We're done.
Star rating. Yeah. One. Yeah, done.
Exactly.
Now, in our green room preparations before the show, you mentioned that this was the first... Not this. Okay, the Blair Witch Project was the first horror film you saw in the cinemas.
It was. I mean, this is because of the fact that it was a late bloomer to horror, and I've talked about this many, many times on the show. I'm sure our listeners, longtime listeners, are sick and tired of hearing my story. But of course, just a quick recap. I got into horror in my early 20s. And at the time, I was working at a video store, and I just started voraciously grabbing everything I could. And around the tail end of the 90s, on the dawn of the millennium, I guess it was 1999, I started hearing rumblings of this new, very interesting, unique concept in horror. Independent, low budget, guerrilla style, found footage, never been done before.
All this is in quotes, is not your opinion.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, the hype was enormous. Everybody was talking Blair Witch. Blair Witch was... I don't even know if I'm going to say it was like the horror movie event of that year. It was almost like the movie event of that year. And not only, I can only imagine it akin to like what it was like when The Exorcist came out. What year did The Exorcist come out approximately?
Yeah, I want to say 73.
Yeah, so yeah. Kind of before our time, a wee bit. But with everybody saying, oh my God, you got to see this movie. This is the scariest thing ever made. Well, to this day, I kind of take umbrage for the fact that The Exorcist is the scariest movie ever made. I know a lot of people hold that opinion, but it's a good movie. It's a well-crafted movie. I do think The Exorcist 3 is way better, but that's another story for another podcast. Anyhow, I keep hearing about this Blair Witch movie, and I want to see it. And I was working, now I'm no longer working in a video store, I'm working in a bookstore, and the bookstore was in a mall. So my shift ended at 3 p.m., and I decided that I was going to go down to the cinema in the mall, purchase a ticket, go by myself, and see The Blair Witch Project. The anticipatory fear I had was tremendous. It was palpable. I could feel my heart beating, just thinking to myself, like, what is going to be in store for me? Not only... I wasn't really thinking, like, oh, I've never seen a horror movie in the theater before. Which is kind of not true because, I ran out of one when I was a young kid. My father told me to see Vincent Price's House of Wax, but that just goes to show you, you know. I saw 2 minutes of it back then.
As long as it wasn't Paris Hilton's, House of Wax. But, okay.
Anyhow. But anyway, so I paid for my ticket. I bought my popcorn. I got my soda. I walked into the theater. You gotta think 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. It wasn't exactly a packed house, but maybe a quarter full. And, dude, I was so nervous because what I'm expecting is the scariest, most harrowing experience that cinema has ever produced. And this is what the hype had led me to believe. So the lights fade, the curtains part, the movie begins, and I'm watching it, and I'm still like really, really tense. And like to the point I'm not even eating my popcorn. I'm just like, oh, what's going on? And then about 10, 15 minutes in, I'm starting to feel myself ease up a bit in the sense like, I'm like, what's going on here? This isn't exactly scary. And because of that, I just relaxed more. I started munching my popcorn, watching the film for what it was. Of course, at that point, found footage was novel to me. I mean, of course, I didn't know of the existence of like Cannibal Holocaust and other movies that had done this beforehand. Mm. But I enjoyed that aspect of all. I didn't find it scary, but it stayed with me. And what really, really stayed with me was really about the last 2 or 3 minutes of the movie. That was scary. Now, what I used to do is when I would see a movie in the cinema, is that as soon as it came out for rental, I would then rent it and see it again. And so I did the same thing with Blair Witch Project. And this time, I watched it again just to reaffirm if my thoughts were as they were through my cinematic viewership of it all. And yet again, I found the final scene, the final shot to be scary. But then it left my mind and I've not thought of it. Well, I've thought of it because, I mean, this thing pretty much started this found footage, I didn't even want to say, like, quagmire that we found itself into. And amazingly enough, Blair Witch Project, in my opinion, started the found footage that I thought would be very short-lived, just like I thought when Survivor started the reality TV craze, that would be short-lived. Well, here we are all these years later, it's still going. Meanwhile, it just kept going and going and going like the fucking Energizer Bunny. But what I think is ironic is what finally killed found footage as a viable commercial horror subgenre? 2016's Blair Witch.
Oh my.
So, to make a long story short, first horror movie I ever saw in the theater. I was, the reputation preceded it. I saw it. I was expecting more than what I got. But I respected it. I appreciated it. I did find the final scene a little bit unnerving that I thought about it that night before I went to bed and whatever. And then I think a couple years later, that sequel came out, Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows. Never seen it.
Oh.
And that was, I think, pretty much critically lambasted as well as commercially.
Oh my God. I'm by no means an eminent journalist, but at the time I was maybe an imminent journalist. So I was writing these awful reviews of different things. I was a young guy, I didn't know what I was doing, and I was trying to pitch different publications on my take on concerts and art and whatnot, none of which was getting published at the time. So if you dig somewhere on the interwebs, there might be in a web cache of a letter to the editor that I penned, of all things, about Blair Witch Project.
Wow.
And it irked me to no end that the thing was as popular as it was.
What publication was it that you wrote
to? I want to say it was I Magazine, okay, which became The Grid and then folded, or maybe
this
now
is like our alternative weekly.
Yeah, it was an alternative weekly. It might have been Now Magazine. Mm. And I was going into the weeds with this critical hot take about how it would have been impossible to get lost in the woods of one of the most densely populated states in the U.S., mm-hmm, where it's near the ocean. They have crabs, famously Maryland crabs, and they have crab cakes. I just thought, why not just walk east?
Crab cakes? How would that help you get out of the woods?
Well, I mean, it's not a big state. You just hike for about 3 hours, and then you're at the ocean. So I don't understand how. I'm speaking with the prejudice of Ontario, because we live in this densely thicketed wood where you could get lost very easily. And I was taking the thing to task about why won't these idiots get out of the woods?
Because they couldn't.
No, I know. I realized that now. I was a young guy. I was like, I was trying to do this, worst movie ever kind of a comic book guy.
Worst movie
worst ever.
Yeah. Within minutes, I was registering my disgust on the internet.
For all media.
And I couldn't believe it. And then they published it, and I was like, whoa, someone published my work. So I was taking this thing to task.
And this is a letter to the editor.
It was a letter.
Well, good on you, man. I've written a few letters to the editor. Well, it was like, if I told you one letter I wrote to an editor, I would be, I'm not even going to say it, because it's probably one of the most humiliating things ever. But I just wanted to see my...
Your name in
my
print.
My name in print.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wrote to Rolling Stone magazine commending them on their cover feature on the fucking Spin Doctors. And saying how much, you know, what a good band the Spin Doctors were.
Oh my, that is particularly shameful.
Very shameful.
Oh my god.
They didn't print it. Thank God I don't have that albatross hanging on my neck. Because my love for the Spin Doctors pretty much lasts for about maybe like a week and a half.
Oh my god. Well, I was glad I was able to hone my craft so that like my Parliament Funkadelic definitive concert review didn't never saw the light of day. So I mean, this stuff was really awful. But
frankly, I'd rather discuss the oove of the Spin Doctors than this new Blair Witch film.
Well, what stuck with me, and believe me, it was not much from the first one, and I believe I saw it in the cinema as well. I must have, because I don't think I would have rented it. But just to have like an upshot of someone's nostril, and that really stuck with me, of like this woman's quivering, whimpering, crying mien and demeanor at the end of this movie. And it's just this, I always thought, how could you be so solipsistic to film yourself while you're getting murdered? Like, put down the camera and do something about it, which is something which has irked me with the found footage genre ever since. But then when I think back, maybe if you know you're going to die, and like this has happened when planes are about to go down, you go,
you want to leave send something to a memorial, a legacy, what have you.
Yeah. Well, although, I don't know, does that salvage the Enterprise? Like the fact that I could maybe, in light of the today, be able to look back and see that for what it could be? I don't think because the conceit, I think, is very weak.
The found footage conceit worked at the time because it hadn't been done to death. It wasn't cliched. It wasn't implausible. Like a lot of times when you think, in this movie, the Blair Witch 2016, there's so many times, like, who the fuck is filming this? Is this even supposed to be found footage?
Yeah.
Like there were times when it seemed like it was found footage, and there are other times when they didn't even care to keep up the pretense of it being found footage. But the other thing, the other story about Blair Witch Project is that it was a real Hollywood success story in the sense that you had these two independent filmmakers to self-finance this movie with, I'm sorry, I don't remember the names of the two filmmakers. Sanchez, I think, Eduardo Sanchez may have been one. I don't recall the other one. Anyhow, they self-financed this movie for peanuts. It got picked up for distribution and made hundreds of millions of dollars and became a cultural phenomenon. Now, yet again, I don't recall the budget they touted, but it was something ridiculous, like $14,000 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was like something that, you know, like pocket change when it comes to a cinematic, something you put up on the screen, you know? What a lot of people didn't realize was, yes, that's how much it cost them to make it, but then when it got picked up for distribution, the studio then put in a lot more money for post-production to sort of make it more
movie-like,
cinematic, etc. So it really wasn't as cheap to make as a lot of people at the time. Like El Mariachi, for example, Robert Rodriguez, that thing was made for $7,000. Even then, I think the studio might have put in a bit of money to
For the guitar poster or
something? Goose it up a little bit. Yeah. Make it look. But even then, the whole endeavor might have cost less than $15,000, $20,000. Blair Witch, I think the budget was like, it was definitely within the six-figure once all the post-production, etc. was done. But the thing made like $200 million, who knows? And it was, as I said, it created not only a phenomenon, not only was it became part of the zeitgeist, but it spawned this subgenre that just would not end. Just like Scream just spawned this subgenre of self-referential horror that went on and on and on. And at first it was amusing, at first it was novel, at first it was entertaining. And then after, you know, you just get this one pale carbon copy after another, and just a copy of a copy of a copy, and everything just gets diluted and everything becomes worse. And I personally tired of the myself got tired of the found footage genre. I would say maybe we started our blog.
Yeah.
Because we got to stand so many indie movies and they're all found footage. Some of them were quite good. But unfortunately, the wheat outnumbered the chaff.
No, the reverse.
Sorry, exactly. The chaff outnumbered the wheat by an exponential amount.
Well, you mentioned El Mariachi, and I think a good analogy would be how the electric guitar hides a lot of flaws in musicality, because you can crank up the distortion, crank up the reverb or whatever. And if you just hand someone a camera and say, detail the proceedings, I mean, where does the art end and the amateurish chronicling begin?
But that's,
and that's where I find fault with the conceit, because especially in Blair Witch 2016 and the first one, you don't know where it ends and begins. There's a time and a place for everything, particularly found footage. So when you think Cannibal Holocaust, they find footage, but the movie is not found footage. The movie is people going through the jungle and encountering cannibals, and then they find something. So the something that they find
the conceit of the movie is that footage is found, and then they're trying to sort of
figure it out,
piece together what
that
happened.
Makes sense.
But that's sort of the conceit of Blair Witch, in the sense that they said, you know, a tape was found, da da da. We never heard from these kids again.
This Blair Witch. Oh,
I'm talking. Well, they're the same. That's the whole thing. Like they're.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is another thing I want to... I mean, there's so much I want to get off my chest about this new Blair Witch, but when I was a kid, movies that I loved invariably spawned sequels. Now, sometimes when a movie was a hit, but the principals didn't really want to come back for the sequel, so you had a different actor playing like a different character that's only tangentially related to... Like, I'm thinking, for example, Teen Wolf 2.
No, The Fly 2, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
The Fly 2 was good, though, but Teen Wolf 2, like, I remember... Because, you know, I mean, I don't even recall it getting a theatrical release. If anything, I might have seen an ad for in the paper, and it was one of those movies that, like, open and close in the same day. And when I say Teen Wolf 2, it's Teen Wolf T-O-O, because it was Jason Bateman in his cinematic debut. I mean, he was already on TV, Hogan Family, what have you, taking over for Michael J. Fox, and he played a cousin to Michael J. Fox's character. And all the same beats were hit, just with a different character and small little changes. Instead of basketball, it became boxing. But it was the same. And as a kid, I called this rerun sequels. And every time I would like go to the theater to see a sequel, or rent, I'm like, oh, I really hope this is not a rerun sequel. The last time I remember calling something a rerun sequel, I think it was Home Alone 2. I felt they were just, you know, hitting all the same beats, but just changing it from a suburban home in Chicago to the Waldorf Astoria, I believe it was, in New York City. And watching the Blair Witch 2016, it's the same fucking beats. There was nothing different, dude.
Yeah, just a minor update of technology.
Exactly. Drones and this and that.
And really... I'm not sure, because it's the original has sort of left my memory banks, with the exception of like the up nasal shot there. But my God, this Burkittsville, Maryland lore. Never has a smaller place produced so much. Like, this is practically like the Loch Ness Monster. I mean, the characters in this movie, as they venture out into the woods to seek the sister of the missing sister. That's the link between the two films. And then, my God, they just...
Heather, her brother,
Heather,
James, is...
Yeah. James is looking for Heather in the woods, and my God, is this lore built up.
And
you'd think this was centuries old, this town, because they chronicle one murder, one disappearance, one weird happenstance after another.
Yeah,
it's
almost like Stephen King's It. Like, yeah. You know, he's going back for centuries.
Over and over again. Yeah. I mean, my God, and I'm pretty sure this wasn't part of the original mystique, or maybe lack thereof, of the first one. I mean...
In the beginning, and again, this is going by memory from 20 years ago, but I do believe that there was a rash of disappearances and so on.
Yeah, which I could see, not just this highly detailed thing, and again, this town of a few hundred people. Mm-hmm. And so you have a bunch of principals, none of whom I can really honestly remember, both from the first and 2016, venturing out into the woods to seek evidence for the disappearance of one of them, their sister, and also to enlist the help of a couple local rednecks who maybe know the woods a little more to be sort of fixers to help this filmmaker go into the woods. But that's, I'm guessing that's the exact same thing. So no new beats.
Well, that is a new beast, because in the original it was just the three kids. There was no enlisting of any help. I mean, here you had a group of about seven people.
Yeah, so you double the victims.
As you said, the technology was increased. They had drones. You know, now we have cell phones, etc. So they had to talk about that. They had GPSs. Or why aren't we getting a GPS signal?
Oh, good Lord. I mean...
So they just had to dismiss a lot of technology. But getting back to how the original film was made, the actors that played the three principals... I remember the name Heather. I don't remember the two other guys. I think it was two guys and one girl.
Might have been, yeah.
They were amateurs. They were 100% amateurs. They had never acted before, and frankly, I don't think they've done much since. And a lot of it was improvised too. And a lot of it was the principals not being told, like, you're going to wake up and you're going to find this totem, or you're going to wake up and this might be moved. Like, so in other words, they're sort of reacting to things that they didn't know was going to happen. So that kind of lent it, and because it wasn't, it was still like in the VHS era, it had this sort of like cinema verite style.
Yeah.
And these things all worked in the film's favor.
That's a subtle distinction, because good acting does the exact same thing. Right.
Yes, no.
It's kind of force-feeding someone a situation, but I see your point.
But they wanted to get a really naturalistic, and you did get that naturalistic feel with the first one, which I did not get at all in 2016's Blair Witch. It just felt like people acting a script, and poorly, for that matter.
Yeah, and they're venturing out into the woods, and I think this is where I'm going to introduce my accentuate the positivity here. The woods are really great here. Mm-hmm. And I said to my girlfriend when we were watching this, is like, they location scouted this awesome place, mm-hmm. with this fantastic running river, and there's darkness, and nary does the daylight punctuate the forest canopy. So I'm like, man, this is great.
Are we talking about the original now?
No, 2016. Because 2016, there's a nice forest, okay. And mm-hmm. you have people who are lost there, and great. Like, this is a fantastic setting, and mm-hmm. you could just have had bickering amongst the six of them. You have a great scene that you've established, and yet everything is sort of thrown asunder when they end up in this stupid hut, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, a callback to the first one, which is the witch's hut. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the witch-a woman from Seinfeld here, the witch hut. Stupid, right? And pointless, considering you've invested all this. I mean, you really don't need much for a film. We've talked about place, importance of setting, importance of grounding a foundation, and
you need this, characters that you're invested in.
Yeah, and so far, I mean,
whether it's the antagonist or the protagonist, of course, in this one, the antagonist is some ephemeral being that we never see, and that's the same thing happened in the first. So
you fail on the front where you're investing in the characters, because apart from some meetup where they go to someone's house and compile their equipment and then go out with their camping gear into the woods, no investment, no interest, other than the fact that a couple of these shitlords, edgelords, whatever you want to call them, seem to be self-professed experts on the topic, but they add really little of any value. I believe the one guy's name is Lane. He's like one of these like first-person shooter in a trench coat kind of goth degenerate types. And I don't know.
When they're telling the stories about the legends, you know, like the students, the college students, what have you, they're laughing at them and so on. And so like, I'm writing down like, you know, rubes versus sophisticates sort of thing, like trying to find something to grasp onto thematically. But that was
There's nothing. Yeah.
But it's funny because you mentioned the woods, right? Now, that's very germane to this discussion. Reason being, because this film was shot by, of course, Adam Wingard and, directed Simon Bear wrote it. They're known for Your Next.
Yeah.
Which is good. They're follow-up.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. Your voice inflection. It was like, Barbara Crampton was in it. She was fun. She's always great to see.
It's in our book, you know.
Yeah, it's like there's various sort of Rube Goldberg kind of contraptions that are involved to lay waste to some of the.
I liked it. I thought it was good with female protagonist, and it
had a good sense of place. It was fairly well done. Yeah. Like a grudging 7 out of 10. Like, it was interesting.
Even before that, they made a film called A Horrible Way to Die. Did you see that?
No.
It was good. Mm. Now, the follow-up to Your Next, because that film came out with a lot of hype, did moderately well, was a film that just basically was a blip on the radar. It was called The Guest. I saw it on Netflix, and it didn't leave me with any impression whatsoever. In other words, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it.
So you didn't fill out the guest book saying, glad I saw this or whatever. Okay.
No guest book. I'm trying to think of another guest con at this moment, but other than...
Be my guest. Yeah.
But yeah, so this was interesting. The marketing of this film was better than the actual film, just like with the original Blair Witch, because it was being shot under the working title of The Woods. And then in 2016, I guess, I believe it was the South by Southwest Festival, which is actually going on right now as we're recording this, and they were going to screen the new Adam Wingard film, The Woods. And then when the curtain goes up, instead of the woods, it's Blair Witch.
Uh-huh.
So nobody knew this was coming. This was like a stealth sequel. And everybody went apeshit. Like they were, and then when word, did they actually see the movie? Because when word leaked that this is happening, and we're actually getting a new Blair Witch, and it's coming from two filmmakers that are now held in some high esteem, you know, I mean, they're no, this is before that Death Note adaptation they did for Netflix, which I haven't seen, but apparently a lot of people really hated
that.
Yeah,
I've not seen it either. Huh?
So once again, the tsunami of hype was there. People were like, this is, I can't wait. Enough time had passed that the stink of Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows had dissipated, and there was goodwill, and people were really excited for this. Until it opened up in the until opening weekend, when people actually saw it, and we're like, "What the
damn?
What the fuck?"
I'm game for some storytelling involving the woods, because I saw the forest and the theater, the mystique of the Japanese. I think it's outside of Tokyo, the suicide forest.
Now, you weren't hallucinating. You saw the movie of the forest.
I saw, yeah, I didn't see the forest for the trees.
You weren't like an LSD and saw like a forest instead of a...
And this drew upon the very real suicide forest outside of Tokyo that has claimed hundreds of victims to the point where warning signs are apparently all over the place. To, I mean, much like the suicide barriers were here in Toronto on this bridge we have that the subway crosses over. I bought into that mystique of the sewer, and I read up on it, and that filled me with dread, and which the film didn't really capture to the extent maybe a documentary, I think, would have. Mm-hmm. So then they might have been better served to have a more documentary-style feel. I bought into the original mystique of Blair Witch because I think that is great to build up the lore, and I think that's fantastic what they did at South by Southwest. That would have been mind-blowing. That's a great stunt worthy of, you know, the Tingler or anything, you know, with Lloyd Kaufman. So that's pretty badass. But it's just in terms of the execution, like, that you have to bolster your lore with execution, and technically...
Bolster the lore. Add something new to the lore. There was I shouldn't say nothing, but there was hardly anything added to the lore. Like I said before, this is a rerun sequel. This film, with the exception of a few little things here and there, all it did was hit the exact same beats of the original. And I'm telling you now, half the movie was just walking around the woods, yelling out people's names, you know?
Yeah, I said the same thing. It's like, whose name are they going to call out now?
Yeah.
So it's like, Ashley... Ashley, that's, I guess, one of the black girlfriend of one of the protagonists. And then Heather.
Well, Heather was gone.
James. And I'm thinking, geez, maybe they paid the screenwriter by the word? Like, what's going on?
Lisa. Oh, I need 50 more Lisas. To make, you
know. But I'm thinking, I mean... God, it's held in much higher regard than this, but neither of us was left with a solid impression of the Halloween 2018, because it was just beat for beat Halloween 2, mixed with some of the first, and just meh, escape from an asylum.
But
a big effing deal.
To the credit of Halloween 2018, our dissenting voice, yeah, there were other dissenters, but there were a lot of people that really liked it. Whereas with this one, it was unanimous critics, audiences, everybody just realized they'd been had. And, you know, they're just paying for second verse, same as the first.
Yeah.
With nothing of any substance added to the lore. And if you're creating lore, that's a great sandbox to play in, right?
For sure. And lore has to be grounded in gritty realism as well, which in order to get a payoff from the more supernatural elements. And when you had the group hiking through the woods and they cross this stream and they're carrying thousands of dollars worth of equipment and they're crossing a fast moving river, and I'm thinking, like, what is going on here? This is absolutely ridiculous. Find a better, safer crossing. This is absurd. I wouldn't even go across this with like a Canon DSLR. I mean,
you're a clumsy man.
And then when the one woman cuts her foot, this is a pretty impressive wound, and she should have been like screaming her tits off, and it's this gaping like 3 or 4 inch wound that really needs stitches. Like, I've fallen on my head, I had to get stitches in a hospital. Don't say that explains a lot, please.
Jeff. Yeah, sorry, like, this is a serious wound, and my girlfriend pointed it out, and then I noticed it as, like, you cannot continue with this kind of injury. You go back to your van, you go back to your car, and you go to the nearest, whatever, Baltimore hospital. This is insane.
You don't keep calm and carry on, basically.
Yeah, and this is like, this woman has a stiff upper lip, and she just ventures forward. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This is serious business. They're going without shoes through this river as well.
No, I apologize. I was distracted for a moment because I was looking at my notes and I kind of chuckled because I'm just writing down stuff. Here's what's going on. Here's what's going on. And then all of a sudden, I heard something. There's something out there. And the next thing I wrote is, here we go again.
Shit.
Because basically that's it. You know, you had those local, I guess,
Fixers.
Whatever. They believe. And then you have the skeptical sophisticates. But as soon as they heard that one thing, oh, what was that? What's going on? And then the whole sequence just started again. It was like the Groundhog Day of horror sequels. It was like, oh, my Lord. You mentioned that the woods were good. The actual setting.
Yeah.
I personally, looking at my notes, I wrote down the woods seem much less foreboding in this one.
Oh.
And I think it's just because of the difference in digital versus tape. The first one was VHS. It wasn't this pristine image. It looked like something that you would literally find in the woods. It's like, what the hell is this? It's like, finding a porno mag in the woods when you're a young kid. Apparently that was a phenomenon where a lot of people, I never did it, but a lot of young kids apparently either hid or found pornography in the woods when they were young.
Have you We found pornography in a park, and my buddy Ari stashed it in a tree inside the trunk. And then we went out early in the morning before our parents were up to go sit on a park bench in Toronto to see this contraband porno. And my dad saw us, and we were out there, asked us what we were doing, what we had in our hands. We were trying to conceal it under our jackets. And he was not a happy man. He was a very stern, old school Italian taskmaster. Mm-hmm. Commandeered the Hustler from us, ripped it to shreds, and gave me like a solid tongue lashing, and that was pretty bad.
Okay,
I'm deeply embarrassed.
I got to go into a tangential story about since I brought up pornography in the woods.
Yeah.
So
what a segue.
Here I am, maybe about 14 years old. And a mutual friend of ours, because at the time I was very nomadic as a child, we moved around a lot, and for a very brief period, because I'm living in the city again, but mostly growing up I lived in the burbs, and as did you, and but for a very brief period we lived in a very tiny condominium, maybe 400 square feet, me, my mother, and my sister, right at Bay and Bloor, which is like the heart of the city.
Yeah.
And a mutual friend of ours came by. I'm not going to mention his name because this is a really embarrassing story. Yeah. We're 14 and we want to walk down Yonge Street, right? Which is, what can you compare Yonge Street to?
42nd Street, I think, with all the porno shops and the strip clubs.
Yeah.
Since somewhat gentrified.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be, but you want to, you look at the head shops, etc. You want to, you see your Samantha Fox push through the windows. There's a lot of record shops. The kid would get his jollies just walking down and going to these illicit stores, right? And maybe looking at things that were, you may see like some boobies. We've been talking about boobies a lot in this podcast lately, but it doesn't matter. So we're crossing the street. Now, this was the month of December. And as we're crossing the street, this kind of like older, but not old, maybe like middle-aged, gruff man with this giant bag, like a hefty garbage bag. He reaches in and pulls something out, and he starts poking it in our friend's ribs, going, take it.
Ugh.
And our friend didn't want to take it, and nor did I. And the guy's like, take it. And he's like poking it in his ribs harder and harder and harder, and the light changed. So, take it. Just take it. So, because we got across. We got to get away from this nutty guy over here, right? So, what it was just something wrapped in plain brown paper. We went into like an alcove or an alleyway or something. We ripped it open, and it was 3 Penthouse magazines. So it's funny because I think of this guy as almost like the smutty version of Santa Claus, giving 14-year-old kids pornographic magazines.
This is quite
right?
a midnight cowboy experience you're having in the big city. Jesus Christ.
But this is how we reacted, man. I said, leave it there. Let's go. I'm scared. And we dropped it and we ran.
Oh,
we
my
didn't
God.
Walk. We ran the three blocks back to my where I was living at the time. We were terrified. Terrified to be given porn at the age of 14. Anyway.
Oh, my God. How do you top that?
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. So now we got to get back to the discussion of Blair Witch 2016. So what I'm going to challenge you right now. Tell me something commendable about this movie.
Hmm. Okay. I think I already, you know, blew my load, pardon the pun, on the first thing I said.
I just, I had to roll my eyes.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to say that, and this is obviously a spoiler, I would hope our listeners have heard it, but, or have watched the movie before our broadened discussion here, but the twist that involved the fakery on the part of the fixers to manufacture elements of the Burkittsville legend, I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah.
And I can't say whether that was in the first one, because I honestly can't remember.
No,
but I think that's an interesting idea. It reminded me of the Canadian Deliverance, of course.
Oh, rituals.
Rituals, yeah. Where you have a bunch of mock, I guess, constructed items that are left in to threaten campgoers. So in that case, it was just there was a deer carcass strung up, much more foreboding than this, which would be a bunch of sticks tied together to create the symbol.
The famous Blair Witch Totem, yeah.
Yeah.
Which has become iconic.
Which I thought that was kind of neat, because these cynical bastards are trying to, they're toying with the emotions of their erstwhile friends here that they're leading out into the woods. And I thought they could have done a little bit more with that. And I thought that's really interesting. So they had a fight, which, again, that's par for the course when you have internecine bickering amongst friends. So it's like the one guy chases the other guy and threatens to beat the shit out of him. Mm. He disappears into the woods. And they could have done a little more with that.
And that's when all the, like, and I'm putting this in very, very accentuate air quotes, and all this spooky shit started happening, because then they break off and the two locals, you know, when they run into the other people, they're like, we've been lost in the woods for 5 days, and the other guy's like,
why don't you believe us? Yeah,
it's only been a day. Like, so all this like temporal shifts and so on, and everything is like, so, you know, their minds are being played with, and of course they find other totems, and there is real veracity to it, and there was a bit of a twist to the totem, but it was so nothing, you know what I mean? It was so pedestrian. You know, basically, a spoiler alert, the totem sort of acted like voodoo dolls, whatever.
Yeah, you know? Very workmanlike.
And it's, but like I said before, again, the beats were the same, man. And even the ending was pretty much, like, almost shot for shot the same as the original. But without the effectiveness, without the spookiness.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, I mean, we could probably, I mean, the expression name them on one hand, obviously, literally we could, with the number of found footage movies that are fairly recent that have resonated with us. Certainly the ones that don't, I'm thinking that, I think it was a Rec remake with the Dexter, the woman from Dexter.
Quarantine,
it was just abysmal. But
Rec is phenomenal.
It was fun, but at least Quarantine used footage that was ENG, electronic news gathering. It was journalist footage, so at least they embedded embedded journalism. At least they embedded their found footage in proper conceit. They didn't just sort of throw it around willy-nilly. I quite liked a 2008 movie called Head Cases, which was
you've been talking about that for a lot.
That was neat, and it was something about the Delaware Valley. My memory escapes me, but it actually incorporated really legitimate found footage, which included audio tapes of, I think, confessions from made-up serial killers, and I thought that was much better handled. It gave it a very 48 hours mystery kind of vibe to it. But at least, again, they were recreating old technology in a very meaningful, powerful way, using that old technology. So they used tapes, but it serviced the story in a good way. It wasn't just, past the gravel, cameras swinging to and fro. Sorry, I got to apologize here. We have our window open, and there's like construction and sirens going on here. We're as far away from the forest as you could possibly get. So, like, we are close to the CN Tower and near downtown Toronto, so it's a little rough, but yeah, you have to know, when to use it and know when not to. And in small doses, it can be extremely effective.
Yeah, I mean, Paranormal Activity, maybe the first one, somewhat. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they're ghost,
because there are different endings.
It's true, but they're ghost hunters who are trying to capture something while they sleep. So when you see this fluttering image, it adds an extra bit of.
But to me, all the Paranormal Activity movies are, and then this is from the first, that God knows how many they made, the ninth. They've made so many sequels of that movie. It was just watching a static shot with like two people sleeping or whatever, and then seeing this little flutter in the corner of the screen. Oh, did you notice that?
Yeah.
And that's that. Those were the frights. Did you see that move? Not much.
But the first time you saw it, it was very impactful. And then they keep reinventing the wheel. And then
Two endings came out to cinemas. So depending upon which ending you saw, one was much more impactful than the other. I don't want to get into the endings of Paranormal Activity and so on. But this was, and then of course Blumhouse just went crazy with, you know, all these other found footage stuff. And it went on and on and on. And everyone kept saying, when is it going to end? When is it going to end? Well, as I was watching for the first time Blair Witch 2016, I realized, thank God it's ended.
Yeah.
When was the last time a major found footage horror film came out in the cinemas? I can't recall at this moment.
Well, I want to also say Creep was incredibly deft use of it. But it wasn't the main thrust of that production. It was just a neat little add-on that got you into the eyes and into the face of the antagonist in a really kind of cool, subtle way. So it wasn't, the entire film wasn't built around it by any means.
Frankly, my favorite found footage, I mean, besides the aforementioned Campbell Holocaust, which I like with reservations because, you know, there's certain scenes that are very hard for me to stomach, mostly had to do with our four-legged friends.
Yeah, true.
My favorite found footage is the Found Footage Film Festival. These two guys that basically scour thrift stores. And,
yeah, these two dudes from Michigan, they have an Associated Magazine, and they print stuff of like letters and angry missives to parking attendants and all sorts of stuff.
They'll find stuff like, you know, crazy infomercials or on, or crazy public access stuff. They're the ones that discovered the Winnebago Man, who became a bit of a cultural phenomenon himself. Mm-hmm. A great documentary was made about him.
Yeah.
Wonderful documentary, actually. Mm-hmm. And they never fail to make me laugh with the stuff that they unearth. So when it comes to horror, I just never really got on the boat with found footage. Because the first Blair Witch, I was so, like, again, the hype preceded itself so much. I wanted to be scared out of my mind. I wanted to not even be able to eat my popcorn for fear that I was just, like, going to blow chunks of her out of fright.
Yeah.
But then I just sort of settled in, and it was okay. So, yeah, but that's interesting, though. Because, it wasn't until, and this was your suggestion, so I'm blaming this horrible experience I had this weekend that just passed, of wasting an hour and a half of my weekend
watching this. I think the ledger sheet is pretty even in terms of on whom the blame can be laid. Because we've suggested things to one another that have really been kind of really appalling, but we've soldiered on
no matter what, so it's always good. But I think that's the most that I, because, you know, I think pretty soon we're going to segue into what did I learn, and I guess there are two things that I learned. The first thing, the most striking thing I learned, it was not really what I learned, but what I realized is, holy shit, the Blair Witch Project was the first horror movie I saw in the cinema. That was pretty much my biggest takeaway. The second takeaway is, you can have amazing marketing. You could pull that off to a T. Stealth screenings, covert titles, what have you. But that may get some asses in the seats for the opening weekend. But you got to deliver the goods.
And it's
if you don't
true.
Deliver the goods, word of mouth spreads like a fucking forest fire.
It's
and
true,
that's what happened to...
It's no all about intended. The forest. Yeah.
That's what happened to this one. And it sunk like a stone in its second weekend.
We found this movie pretty bad, and this is a great segue into what we've learned. Mm-hmm. So I learned that I've never seen POV pissing in a movie. So when the one guy relieves himself against a tree, sure enough, you don't see that his schlong, which might have been interesting. All you see is this video footage.
It all goes back to pornography in the woods.
It's this guy staring at a tree, and then soaking it with his, with urine soaking it, and I'm thinking, is this, this is what I, this is my takeaway to this rubbish movie that, okay, I'm always looking for first, and I can't, to my recollection, think of another drone movie that I had seen, because drones, like AI, are so ubiquitous that they've polluted every kind of venture to the point where everything is being promoted with the AI. The stupid supermarket products are being promoted with AI, and I'm thinking, fine if it's a video game. That makes sense, but I don't need like some handy wipe being promoted with AI. I'm just not like fucking interested.
Everything becoming smart now? Is that what you mean?
Everything is, oh my God, yeah. Everything is the Internet of Things. Exactly, everything is the goddamn drones. And a hallmark of a good movie is when the technology is in the rearview mirror or made obsolescent, like as Marshall McLuhan would say. Let's say video drone.
Exactly.
VHS tape. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that tapes are no longer in existence, because that is a fabulous movie that touches on all these issues of mind, body, and the interface between technology and the human.
Well, it's
interesting, and this movie is already dated with its drones.
Yeah, Videodrome is a McLuhan-esque movie, and Martin McLuhan is most famous for saying the medium is a message, but in Videodrome, the medium is irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It's the themes that surround it. It could have been anything instead of a VHS. It could have been a disc. It could have been a flash drive. It could have been the cloud, for all you know.
Yeah, for sure.
It would have worked because there was ideas, there was concepts. There was characters, there was fright, there was, that movie had everything going for it.
And I could not have cared less when they elevated the drone into the sky to try and gain a better vantage point and saw woods for miles and miles and miles and nary a road to be found. It was like, yeah. So what? It might have been even more interesting had they found the road and then they tried to follow it, but they just wasted that. It just became almost the excuse to dismiss the cell phone signal in that... I mean, my God, Most Likely to Die, that god-awful movie. It's like, I can't find a cell signal here. Like, whatever, it's been done to death where you explain that away. Mm-hmm. They could have done something. First time I've seen a drone, do something cool with a drone. Fucking kill someone with a drone, for all I care. What can you do? I mean, there's a wasted opportunity. Like, the whole movie was essentially a wasted opportunity, calling out character names in darkness, I've associated with horror since the mid-70s Hammer.
I mean, honestly, this movie... bored me. I will admit to you that
it was eye-wateringly dull.
Yeah.
Is that the first thing you've learned?
Well, no. Basically, the only takeaway I have is that the Blair Witch Project was the first horror film I saw in the theater. That was a recollection. I have no other takeaway from this movie other than it almost seems like they were purposely trying to make the worst possible film they ever could.
Yeah.
That's honestly, like, at the end of it, I think I wrote down my notes. I don't know, because I dropped on the floor, but I wrote, like, were they actually trying to make the worst possible version of Blair Witch? I don't know. Like,
and cycling back to the same spot you've been lost at is a cliche of cliches.
But it's fine.
Like, that is lame as hell.
Add new stuff,
like,
you know?
Oh my God, we're lost. Oh my God, this is just where we camped out two nights ago. I mean, come on.
So, I don't know. Were they trying to appeal to people who were nostalgic for the original Blair Witch? If that's the case, then they're just going to disappoint them by just rehashing it. Were they trying to appeal to new fans by rehashing it and saying, okay, well...
I'm not sure.
That's
a tough one, because people come to horrors through various channels. We've seen this with both Halloween and Evil Dead, where I think... a lot of maybe millennials and Generation Q or whatever the fuck it's called that comes after millennial would have been their first entree into these classic films. So a lot of people will see the first quote-unquote classic before they see the Elijah Wood remake of Maniac. You could list them, a slew of them. So I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, this is a cheap cash-in because they already had a built-in network. They had a built-in audience. They could easily dismiss the sequel. As just, okay, this never happened, which is you can always create your own lore when something never happened. It's similar to Halloween.
I guess
the sequels never happened, so we have a tie-in, and we've attached a known commodity to it, Mr. Wingard, Mr. Barrett. Fine. Here we go. Go nuts, and the interceding movies never happen. We can have this big spectacle that we can launch. But again, if you don't bring the goods, then what is it? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to see any more of this, frankly, unless you do something a little novel with it.
Well, it's interesting because to this day, the actual Blair Witch has never been seen cinematically. There is a creature in this movie that a lot of people are mistaking for the Blair Witch, but apparently it's one of the Blair Witch's victims. Now, when the Blair Witch Project came out. So here's something that I, again, not learned, but a recollection. At the time, I was collecting action figures, as I still kind of do, but I've spoken about this on a previous podcast. Todd McFarlane was coming out with a line that was called Movie Maniacs. And you could actually go to Toys R Us and you could buy, in the first wave, blood-splattered action figures of, like, Freddy, Jason, and then, of course, Michael Myers came, and, it, you know, even, like, Norman Bates, Ghostface, what have you. They did the Brundlefly. They did so many.
Sweet.
And I believe it was either the second or third wave, they were all set to release, immortalized in 6-inch plastic, with articulation, a Blair Witch action figure, the actual Blair Witch. And the designers at McFarlane Toys were going either by concept art or their own imaginations. Whatever happened, it never saw the light of day. It was pulled because they realized, you know what, the mystique should be kept. I did see what it looked like because I used to read Toy Fair magazine and they showed what it looked like. Yeah, it was just your standard, you know, decrepit old hag, you know, like some diaphanous gown or whatever.
Damn. Yeah. Nothing nearly as memorable as the Good Guy doll, unfortunately.
And nothing as memorable as Robert Eggers' The Witch.
Mm-hmm.
I got the director right there, didn't I?
I think so, yeah. Which we both really found quite compelling. And, talk about a stroke of genius to set this in, well, Mayflower-era USA. I mean, we both really enjoyed that movie as part of this horror renaissance that we're experiencing with amazing movies in the last 2 or 3 years that are just being released like nobody's business. And... yeah, well, I would say that the original Blair Witch sort of capped an end to the most dismal era, if you want to say maybe the early 2000s for horror, and maybe it was a good coda to go off on. A piece of shit movie like that to end the decade, 20 years later, release this piece of shit, and hopefully 20 years hence, they will not revisit this for a kind of 40-year Halloween-esque
revival.
Well,
you know the old saying, right? Fool me once,
shame on me.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Exactly, so nobody will be fooled again to buy into this hype for any other Blair Witch unless something like super incredible happens, but I don't know. I can't foresee. So I am going to give this movie the lowest star rating I've given in the history of this podcast.
Uh-huh.
I am giving it a big nada. Zilch.
Interesting.
0 stars. Avoid at all costs. It's not worth your time. There's nothing commendable about it. If you've seen the first Blair Witch, you've already seen this movie, and you've seen something much more superior. Even though I don't think the first Blair Witch was that great. So, no stars for me.
Wow.
This is a total don't waste your time and skip. Just skip it. Go on with your life. It doesn't exist.
Oh my God.
I used to say that, you know, just by being a movie... something deserves at least 1 star just by just made me so angry that I have to remove that star because of my rage hall.
God, I'm thinking of that infamous atheist billboard that they rolled out across the city of Toronto. It said there's probably no God, so just go on with your life. I'm almost reminded of that. It's just okay, just go about your daily business. Don't bother with this one. It had a few minutes where it came alive, I would say 10 of the running time of 80, where I thought maybe they had something here. Like there's a kernel of a good movie if you dig deep enough that they had the makings of. And they could have explored more about the subterfuge and the fakery and the, you know, the duplicitous nature of the one duo.
That's
it just
why,
was wasted.
Yeah,
it
was that made me so sort angry of, because it was such a wasted opportunity. They could have done so much more.
I'm going to give it 1 crisscrossed set of sticks out of a possible 5. I'm doing that a lot lately here. Man, when you see these blips and cracks and sideways cameras and someone falling into the woods and then someone dropping a camcorder into the water, and it's just like this serves no purpose.
I'm just so
there's
fit.
Just no point. You cannot execute a directorial auteur vision when you're dealing with amateur equipment and people chronicling stuff, whipping it around their head 180 degrees. That's not the way a movie should be shot.
I hate it in slasher films when I you know, it's basically called walk time, when they're just, you know, walking through the house going, oh, where's so-and-so, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's just padding, needless padding, and then this is, instead of walk time, it's search time, calling out the names. It's almost like Red Rover or something. Like, I don't know.
It's almost like they're selling timeshares to like Florida condos because they each have an earpiece set in and they're communicating with one another through, I mean, the device, obviously, you know, walkie-talkies, Stranger Things type thing. And so I'm not interested in walkie-talkies. I'm not interested in technology and... of its time technology. I'm interested in character investment and sense of place, and I'm interested in going beyond the brushstroke boilerplate that spurred the initial vision.
They could have done so much more with the conceit that, yes, you have a connection to the original and that you have James, Heather's brother, although if this is 20 years later, I mean, that's, I don't know when this movie was supposed to come out because James looked to be about 20 at the most, right? But... yeah, I mean, they could have explored some of the psychological aspects of losing his sister to the woods, how that...
oh, my God. They could have had someone reach out to James with a photo of maybe lost Heather and then saying, like, I really want to connect with you because I'm not sure this is who it seems, and then have this person murder James. Or what? Anything. You could have done a Craigslist killer type thing. I'm just spitting out ideas willy-nilly here, but, I mean, my God, you do not need to have people investigating... the same lore, going to the same woods with the same result. Mm-hmm. That's just
the reality
by
is
the numbers, by the book, over and over and over again. It's
Gus
irrelevant.
Van Sant's shot by shot remake of Psycho took more risks than this one did, because there were certain parts where it wasn't quite shot by shot. And even though that's universally derided, I hate it. You probably hate it too. I saw that in a theater, so that came out before Blair Witch.
A couple days ago, I saw Beetlejuice and the stroke of genius for Tim Burton.
That's not horror. That's
no, but it's comedy horror with the stroke of genius to have a ghost POV of wondering what to do in a bureaucratic posthumous world where they're trying to get a number to have a government bureaucrat tell them what they should be doing in the afterlife. This kind of spurred, I think, The Good Life with Ted Danson. This is that kind of
great
same
show,
show fun
great,
show,
great show.
Excellent actor. And I thought, man, like the amount of vision and creativity that went into Beetlejuice, the antithesis of which is here. That movie is brimming with creativity, a 10 out of 10. This is almost negative integer creativity. You're just treading down the same path. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting back to the forest here, these idiots didn't even know how to demarcate a path when they're hiking. And it's like, they have no business being in the woods and probably deserve their fate. But that's another story. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as rote and as paint by numbers as a film can get. I don't want to give it zero because there are some touches of terror, but my God, I'm just left cold.
It's like the saffron of terror, like a little subtle taste or something. Come on,
yeah,
man. Like,
that's all.
This is zero
this
stars.
This is the saffron of terror with a In-N-Out burger of horror pedestrian paint by numbers. So
having,
this is bad.
Having said that, before I get more depressed than I already am, let's just by talking about this film, let's wrap this thing up.
Yeah, well, we're going to cover a lot more new and old horror from the golden era, from the 80s to the new era in our podcast, the Really Awful Movies podcast, with new shows uploaded, loaded for your listening pleasure every Friday. And we will talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.